Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Story time.
So, this is a weird story that happened a few years ago that I still don't understand. I understand that telling stories over the internet brings about questions of authenticity and truthfulness about the teller, user, or whatever I am. It's impossible to tell if the story is made up or not, which I fully understand, and I don't expect you to believe me. Just hear me out and think for yourselves. That's all I ask. Maybe even saying all that makes it seem fishy. A couple of years ago, my girlfriend and I decided to make a 2-week trip out to Washington State. We didn't plan anything out, we just figured it out along the way. We first visited Yakima, then traveled to Seattle, then went to Olympia, then Bremerton, then Forks, and ended up deciding to go to Hoh Forest National Park. I don't want to drag on about everything we did before it happened because I don't find it applicable to the story. I can if you think it may apply to the story in the comments section later. Anyway, when we were navigating to Hoh Forest, somehow we got lost. We ended up going about 20 miles off track and ended up in what looked like a tree logging operation area. There were a bunch of wide open sections with tree stumps as far as the eye could see. As we were driving through this area, the sun was setting. I don't know exactly what time this happened, but off in the distance, 100 to 125 yards, I could see movement off the left side of the road. Whatever it was moving fast. It was running from the left side of the road to the right side, if that makes sense. At first, I thought it was a bear. Once it crossed the road, I got really confused. It was running on its hind legs. I watched it for around 15 seconds before it disappeared into the forest. It had to be running at least 30 miles per hour or more. It might have been a bear, but I don't know if they can run that fast on their hind legs or if they do that at all. Help me out, guys. Back when I was a kid, my mother always spoke about her mom being a ranger. She would tell my mom how much she loved it. It inspired me to want to follow in her footsteps. With my grandparents dying and all, I watched my mother do her job, and she loved that park with everything she had. She did it well. She claims the only downfall was all the odd stuff she had heard in the trees, and that was apparently normal. As I grew up, I took over. Every day that I am on the job watching, I make sure that I always have my special soda with me. It always brings me comfort knowing I have my favorite drink. My friends always told me not to apply for the job since so many resign and so many are told to keep quiet about things they see. My friends told me that people who get an opportunity to become a ranger begin to see some strange things. Back in 2019, I got a call to do the night shift for a park. My husband told me not to go. We had already made plans to go out for Christmas. I said we can't go out to eat if I'm not working to put food on the table. Besides, they need extra rangers to patrol, and I need to be there to help. We can celebrate when I get back. I went out the door, heading to the park. I was thinking on the way to the job that if I get bit by something, nobody is there to save me. At least I have my watch that the job gave me to communicate with others. The job is a blessing. Even if you are in trouble, you can always call somebody, and they will help. Usually, as I arrive to work, I see my best friend at work and did not know she was on the same shift. She had been doing a double. When I approached her, we spoke, and she told me about the strange noises she heard right near a pond. All I wanted to do was go home and be with my husband. I really couldn't do anything but continue the job. She clocks back in for a break, and I'm just beginning my shift. It dawned on me that I forgot where my watch was. My friend told me to stay posted, and I agreed. I walked to my vehicle to get my soda anyway. I look over, and I can't find my drink. I kept telling her this stage gets better and better. The event has started, and we're now patrolling the park, making sure everything is running smoothly. She gets a call telling her she needs to split and go to the other side. Someone is requesting her. She told her boss copy that she would report back to him. Turns out the boss never told her to split, it was something interfering. I went to the other side of the park to check on her, and I watched this creature jump down from the tree onto her back, driving both of them into the pond. I ran, trying to rip her off, but this thing was so strong it was not worth it. This creature went into the water so fast, I didn't see it. It was a blessing that I've managed to survive, but my friend, well, that's a different story. I immediately reached out to the dispatcher in the park, nobody answered. I called again from the watch and got the boss. I told them I was worried when it happened. He said they were going to send help right away. They went in after her to try and locate her. Bonnie, but there's no such luck finding anything. We had to shut down the park, we could not risk any of the public getting injured. We also informed the authorities and had them evacuate out of the park. Police said that it was something out of the ordinary that dragged her into the pond. As if that wasn't any more obvious, when we began to review the footage, we saw and heard the noise that she had mentioned. My boss had simply come to the conclusion that she was going crazy, and we know she'd been going through things, but this is definitely not crazy. We had to call her family and let them know what had happened. So, my job asked me, called me while we were being so close, they did not take it well. So before I went home, I stopped by and let them know what happened. They were in disbelief, they could not believe it. I went home after, and before I could share with my husband when it happened, he saw the scratches on my arm and face from that thing. I broke down and told him that she's dead and everything had to be closed down. Facing her family was the hardest thing I've ever had to do. This is the only Christmas where I've had to work, and I hate it. I hate what I had to see. My friend and I live in the southeastern area of Wisconsin. We love to go Bigfoot hunting. My friend lives in a subdivision near some woods. When we go to an empty lot, we throw rocks and bash logs on the side of trees. We never really had an encounter until we decided to stay late and possibly stay the night. It was about 10:30, and I was about 5 feet away from the edge of the forest, just throwing rocks. But I stopped as I heard something moving very slowly through the woods. The rustling stopped, and a rock the size of a softball came flying towards me and landed about 1 or 2 feet away from me. I took this as a warning and yelled to my friend that we needed to go. We began sprinting towards our bikes when we heard it running through the brush. It sounded like a bear or something shaking the trees. Ashley rode our bikes away. My friend asked, "What the heck was that?" I was too scared to speak. My friends and I never slept that night. The next day, we did some research. Nearby, there have been quite a few Bigfoot sightings. We know it wasn't a bear because bears don't live this far south in Wisconsin. Some of you may not believe this, but just know I swear to God I'm not lying. Figured I'd tell you about something that happened to me when I was in my 20s a while back. This is probably going to be really long-winded, but this story requires some backstory too. So this happened in 2011. For some reason I can't get a direct link to the story because the local news website isn't working, or at least the article about it isn't working, or it's broken or deleted or something. There is some mention of it online and you can find people talking about it on forums and linking to the article, which appears broken or deleted, so before people start calling me out for not providing a source, Google body found at James A. Reed and you'll find what I'm talking about. I live really close to James A. Reed. It's a memorial wildlife area of a little over 3,000 acres. It's a popular location for fishing, because it has something like 12 small lakes. I consider them large ponds, really, but semantics, hiking, as there are numerous hiking trails that traverse the entire area, all of which are light hiking or nature walking sort of trails. It's a popular spot for photographers for shooting portraits, and during hunting season it's popular for bow hunting. I'm an amateur photographer, I guess. I do portraiture for a side gig, I like to fish, and I also like to go hiking. So it's basically one of my favorite places and I go there really often. I basically broke into portraiture photography by shooting school photos and couples and such at this location. It has fields with tall grass, great colors in the fall, docks, and easily accessible changes in scenery. It's basically a photographic gold mine. I still do photography, but I'm quite a bit better known at this point and obviously significantly better than I was then. But I still use James A. Reed as my go-to location for almost everything. Boy Scout troops also go hiking through the area on nature walks and such. It's just a very popular area. In the summer of 2011, the body of a 19-year-old guy was found at the wildlife park. They call it a wildlife park, but I mean, the wildlife amounts to deer, fish, lots of snakes, squirrels and cranes. I've never really seen anything else there and I've been there more times than I could ever count. Anyway, the story of this kid's body was a minor news story, but since I was so familiar with the area it was of interest to me. The news report was immediately confusing. According to the report, the kid had been partying with some friends and he OD'd at the party and the story breaks apart here. His friends say that he wandered off and they didn't know where he went. His mother thinks, for no clear reason, and this is the operating story that the news went with, that he OD'd at this party and his friends dumped his body in the wildlife area in the middle of the night. Both of these things are pretty much impossible and I'll explain exactly why, right now. The article mentioned which lake his body was found near. It was Bodark Lake, which is pretty much the farthest lake from the entrance to the park that you can get to. Getting to this particular lake requires driving down about a mile and a half long paved road that hasn't had any service in like at least 2 decades. This thing is riddled with potholes that are car killers. If you don't know where they are, you have to take the road slow. Hitting one of these things in anything short of a full-size pickup will likely destroy your tire and wheel. I've driven it so many times I have the potholes memorized and can drive it pretty normally, weaving in and out of them when they come up, but in the dark of the night, this would be hard, especially for some drunk and high teenagers. But that in and of itself isn't impossible to do. There are 3 gates between the entrance and where his body was found. One right at the driveway leading into the park, which is one of the large swinging steel gates. The next gate is just after that one. In order to get to Bodark, you need to make an immediate right-hand turn after the visitor center, and that is where you run into the 10-foot-tall chain-link fence that's meant to keep the deer in the wildlife area. This fence runs the entire perimeter of the reserve as it's right off of a highway, and they want to make sure the deer stay there for hunting season. You need to get through a second, chain-link fence gate that's chained shut every night. The park opens at sunrise and closes at sunset. After you go through that gate, you get on the previously mentioned paved road for about 3 minutes and come to what they constitute as the ranger station, but it's really just a big parking lot. From here, there is another giant fence gate that is chained shut at night. After you're through that gate, you're in the clear to get to Bodark Lake. The trail near Bodark is particularly scenic, and I've used it countless times for photo shoots. It's also a good walk through nature. So the next day, my girlfriend and I decided we would go check it out, see if we could find where they found the body. I know, disrespectful, but we were gonna go there anyway, so why not? Well, we did find where they found the body. We know this because the police tape was still there, but it was one F of a chore. In order to get to where the body was found, you had to start on the trail near Bodark, but about 5 minutes into the walk, go completely off the path and through the trees and brush, down an extremely steep slope that goes downward about 20 feet, and cross through the stream at the bottom. The stream was about 3 to 4 feet deep, as it was running high, though the water doesn't move very fast. The only reason we knew where we were going was because the original trail was high enough up that through the trees we caught the glint of the yellow caution tape way in the distance. When hiking, we both wore a pair of Vibram hiking shoes that didn't have trouble with water, yes, the ones with toes, but the water was still deep and we didn't particularly want to go swimming, so we walked upstream for quite a while until we found a section that was thin enough to jump across. Mind you, we walked upstream about 10 minutes before we found this, and then walked back down the stream to where we had been to continue in the direction of the caution tape, which we could no longer see now that we were on level with it. After a few more minutes of trudging through particularly thick brush and forestry, we finally arrived at the second stream, on the other side of which was the roped-off area of police tape. The actual taped-off area was pretty small, so we were able to tell pretty much exactly where the body was found. It was on a pile of rocks right on the other side of the stream. We didn't cross this stream because we'd found it, and that was good enough. There was nothing to see. We'd gone from a class 0 nature walk to a class 2-2, at times, class 3 hike getting here. There was absolutely zero possibility of any drunken teenagers carrying a human body this far into the wilderness, in the middle of the night. And this is after they'd bypassed the 3 gates, which were never reported to have been broken into at all. This kid was way off the beaten path, and was very literally in the middle of the wilderness. It was so remote that his body was there for a couple days before anyone found it. I've done a lot of hiking, and even completely sober, in the middle of the day, this was a serious challenge to get to. It's equally impossible that he just wandered away from some party in the middle of the night and found himself here. There are houses along the highway across from James or Reed, most of which are farms, and if you go a couple miles down that highway you do find a residential area. but the notion that he got messed up, wandered miles down the road, hopped two 10-foot fences, walked a mile down a barely paved road, went into the forest, crossed two deep streams, sat down on a pile of rocks, and decided to OD in the middle of the forest is equally, if not more unlikely. So, what happened to him? I dunno. I think it's a lot more likely they went into the forest during operating hours and all started doing drugs in the middle of the forest and they left him where he died. But still, this is a massive stretch. I cannot stress to you the difficulty of getting to this location. Anyway, why is this on the paranormal board? It should be on the This Sounds Like Some Really Bad Police Work board, but I'm getting there, I swear. So we started our retreat back to the actual trail, climbing through the trees and brush, which was now significantly more difficult because we were going uphill, back to the first stream, and after that it was a steep incline which was definitely going to require grabbing trees and getting firm footholds, and some teamwork. But before we got that far, we had to trek back upstream to get to the point where we could jump across it. And right here, is where it went weird. As we're following the stream up, we stopped dead in our tracks, as a middle-aged man in a full business suit was just walking in the stream. He was a tall dude, the water came up to right around his chest. He was in a white dress shirt, a black blazer, black tie, and he had a briefcase in his hand that he was kind of letting float behind him. He was walking downstream, so coming directly toward us, but paid us no mind. We both just stopped and stared at the guy, and then at each other as if to silently say what the F? And both of us backed up as he got closer to us. He passed us by without saying anything or even looking in our direction. He was bald, white, probably around 45 years old, and fairly broad. He had a completely blank expression and he looked like he hadn't slept in days. He had massive bags under his eyes, which were completely dead. His expression was just dead. Slightly slack-jawed, eyes glossed over. It's worth noting he was dry from the chest up. Like he just entered the water and started walking downstream. He was just walking straight down the stream, very slowly. We just stood there, completely silent, staring at this guy until he passed us by and we were now looking at the back of his head as he marched forward. He could have easily exited the water at any point here, the embankment wasn't difficult. But he just soldiered on, down the stream. We now moved way faster than we safely should have been, running upstream to jump across and get back on the trail. And to our car, where we drove off and both immediately started asking each other what the F that was. We tried to tell our friends about this experience but it was beyond even really conveying how weird this was. I don't even think I can properly put it into text to give you the proper context as to how eerie it was. It was just dead silent in the forest, or at least it seemed that way. All we heard was him sloshing through the water as he slowly made his way downstream to wherever the hell he was going. I expected to read about another body being found, like this guy was off to hang himself in the forest or something, but no such news article ever appeared. But the vibe he gave off. Like, man, I really can't explain the feeling that seeing this guy gave us. It was like overwhelming dread, confusion, and I'm sure some terror. I really don't even know how to explain the emotions we were feeling, and we both agreed we didn't even have words for it. It was a totally foreign feeling. Anyway, I don't really have any other notable paranormal experiences. I dunno about ghosts or any of that. So I'm asking the people of Reddit, out of curiosity, what the hell do you think we came across out there? I know I probably didn't need all the backstory to the dead body, but it's a weird case that locals generally feel was not sufficiently answered, because anyone familiar with the area and location will tell you exactly what I just did, that both accounts of how he got there are basically impossible. So were the body and the businessman in the river related, or did we just stumble upon something else while out looking for the location? Who, or what do you think this dude was? I want to tell you it was just a guy randomly walking down a stream of disgusting murky water in a business suit, because weirder things have happened, but I can't shake the feeling that this guy gave off. What do you think? We had a house in Southwest Florida, back in the early to mid-1980s. For over a week, our neighborhood had a series of what I believe were werewolf stalkings. It was June, I think, and around 9 p.m., I was out back on the patio. At that time, no one had fences around their property, because all of us knew the other families around the area. The only exception was the family across the street from us. They had a 7-foot-tall cinder block wall behind their house. They had a large wooded piece of property and kept equipment out there. The dad was in construction and the wall enclosed 3 sides of the property. It was hot out and a slight breeze, no clouds, and starry. As I sat there, I could hear the dogs in the neighborhood begin to bark, then everything got quiet. A lone howl started, so I howled back. I do this rather well. I'd watch National Geographic and would mimic wolf cries. Anyway, this went on for about 5 minutes, and each time the howl from the other end got closer. Down the road are train tracks that run north to south. The sound seemed to come from that direction. I started to get spooked as the howling stopped. Our yard had bushes and a tree on the side where the sound came from. The hair on my arms and neck started to stand up, so I felt like I should go in. As I stood, I heard movement by the bushes. I glanced over and saw something move. I didn't wait to see what it was, so I booked it into the house and I stood by the door, which had glass panes in it. I watched as something very large and dark moved about the bushes. It moved away and I could no longer see it from my vantage point. I went to the front porch to look out the windows, hoping to get a look at whatever was there, but it never came out that way. So I went to bed and read for a while to calm down. About less than an hour later, my brother came home. He came to my room and was as white as paper. He was shaking all over, his eyes the size of saucers. I asked him if he was okay. Now my brother is the sort that has an explanation for anything unusual, and he's a big guy, so for him to be in this state was not normal. He said, "I need you to come with me right now. I'll explain when we get in the truck." I was still dressed, so I got up and went with him. When we got outside, I asked what was going on. He told me there was something in the road by the tracks he needed to show me first. I was not happy about that, as I just had my own experience with something from that way. As we got there, it looked as if something had exploded all over the road. There was blood everywhere, as if something was mowed down in that spot, but there were no body parts anywhere. My brother related then what he had seen coming down the road. I was coming home, and as I got closer to the tracks, there was this huge thing lying in the road. I thought it must have been a mastiff or Great Dane in the road, but as I pulled up to it, it didn't look like a dog I'd ever seen. It was hairy, its head and nose was twice the size of a dog, the body wasn't a dog, just dog-like, but much, much bigger. It was all over the place. There was an arm on the road. Not a dog, a human arm. There was no trace of anything when we got there, and it was only minutes that it took us to get there. I said to get the hell out of there now, and we went back home. I told him what I experienced just before he got home. A couple of days later, my sister came to me and said she had been seeing a large dog prowling around at night. It was huge, and she had seen it across the street, as she sat on the porch. I told her what my brother and I saw, and not to be outside alone until we could find out what it was. We got together and decided to stake out the yard over the next night. Sure enough, it was back in the neighbor's yard. This thing was about the size of a Shetland pony, black in color. We had flashlights turned on it, took off to the back wall behind the house. Their dog was going off like crazy. They had a small terrier. We watched this dog thing scale the wall. The neighbor came out to see what was going on, and we shouted there was something in his yard. He went back in and grabbed his pistol and went around back, but by that time it was gone. When I lived in Ellicott City, we did not use AC in the summer, so we slept with the windows open. One summer in particular, I routinely heard some large animals in my backyard that backs up to a tree line, which is less than a mile from Patapsco. Whatever it was big. It was a big lumbering animal that walked slowly. Definitely not a deer. The footsteps were way too heavy. but the strangest part is the vocalizations. It was a deep squawking. Like a squawking bird, but deeper and larger sounding than any bird. The vocalization always accompanied the footsteps. I've heard audio files of Sasquatch before, like the one from the Sierra Mountains and the ones in Ontario. This sounded nothing like it. One of my friends said he heard it when he was smoking a cigarette outside. I asked my mom if she heard it and she got upset. My mom is religious and doesn't entertain the idea of the unexplained. This was all at night, but I was a teenager at the time and I remember always being awake when it occurred. Like watching TV in my bedroom, I don't remember being woken from sleep to this sound, so I definitely did not dream this. On one occasion in Patapsco, a group of six or seven of us was chased out of the park at night. There was a little clearing we found 50 years or so off the trail. In high school, my friends used to go there at night to drink and smoke weed lol. We were in the park at night every weekend. The sounds of deer and foxes and such were normal to us. We heard heavy footsteps and twigs breaking off in the distance. We said it was deer and kept talking. Then the footsteps got louder and louder. Just deer, we kept saying to each other. Then whatever it was began charging us. Again, this is a decent sized group of guys. Whatever it was coming straight at us. My friend Ben was our leader back then. He was a little older and generally more mature and tougher than the rest of us. He quickly got to his feet, staring in the direction of the charging, white as a ghost. That's when we all realized this truly wasn't normal. We all ran out of the park at once and didn't go back that night. One time a few years later, I was stalked in the park at night. We were 21 now and drinking at the bars in old Ellicott City. We stayed until the last call. Leaving the bar, we weren't ready to go home, so we decided to go on a night hike. We were walking along the trail just talking and telling jokes. That's when we'd hear the sound of heavy footsteps behind us. We'd keep walking 10 or 20 yards, then hear the sound at 11 o'clock. We'd walk some more, then hear it at 3 o'clock. This went on for a mile or so before we said screw this and left. I've spent my life hiking that park and have never been followed like this before. I was at the back of the line and at one point moved towards the middle. The guy who was behind me, my friend Eric, was an outdoorsman too and had just got back from a tour of Iraq. Tough guy. He said F you to me because he was now in the rear and scared too. He grew up here and never experienced being stalked like this either. And the last story is different than the rest but equally weird. In high school, we decided to illegally camp in the park. Because we had no money to reserve a camp spot. So there were four of us. The plan was that my friend Chris would be dropped off at a park entrance to hike in with our gear. The other two found an inconspicuous place to park so their cars wouldn't be outside the park all night and draw attention. So me and my friend Chris are walking down the path just talking normally. This was on an asphalt path. The entrance was the swinging bridge entrance in Ellicott City. Parallel to the path is a tall ridge, and on top of the ridge are the train tracks. So we're walking and we see the glow of a fire on top of the ridge near the tracks. A little odd, but we figured it was teenagers like us and kept going. We heard voices as we got closer, but again thought it was kids like us. Then we got close enough to hear the voices. It was multiple voices that sounded like men, yet they were willing to incoherently. Like yelling gibberish, it was like no language I ever heard. It wasn't Spanish, Japanese, German, or anything like that.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It sounded like a group of insane people yelling garbled nonsense. We just stood there in silence listening. I kept telling myself I couldn't be hearing this. This is impossible. This can't be real. Then my friend Chris said we need to get the F out of here, and we tore off back to the entrance. We called our friends to pick us up. We never went camping that night. One more story for you, I hope these aren't boring to you. My friend lives on a farm that borders Patapsco. So much wood on their land they could hunt on it. He was hunting some small game out there, can't remember. Let me say this is the best, most experienced, and most knowledgeable outdoorsman I know. He spends almost all his free time hunting or doing nature photography. This guy knows these woods. And he told me saw a rotting groundhog crawl out of a hole. He thought it might have rabies or something, so he shot it in the face. He said it kept crawling at him like nothing happened. Said he put three more rounds in it before it stopped, turned around, and went back in his hole. I know a zombie groundhog sounds insane. He knows it sounds insane. But I can only say I know and trust this guy, and he's not the lie for attention type. He saw this and it freaked him out. He said he had no idea how that was possible. Said he saw the rounds connect, the small indentations in the fur where the rounds went in. So sorry if that was a lot, but hopefully you found it interesting. If you have any ideas about what I heard or what chased us out, please share them with me if you have the time. Or if you have any idea about the groundhog. If you have any resources about paranormal stuff in this area you could point me to, please share them. I'd greatly appreciate it. In late fall of 2015, me and my family decided to go to Gettysburg for vacation. Being a big history lover, I was stoked to see the battlefield. The weather was amazing and the atmosphere was somber and peaceful. The first day was mostly spent at the museum and walking parts of the battlefield. Nothing really happened until we were getting ready for bed in the hotel room. My brother sat up suddenly in bed and ran to the door, opening it and stepping into the hallway. We asked him if he was okay, and he asked us if we had heard men yelling orders and cannon fire. We had four people in the room and no one else heard anything. The next day, while we were on the battlefield near Devil's Den, it felt as if someone was constantly following behind us even though no one was there. That second night as we got ready for bed, there was cannon fire, and this time we all heard it, including some of the other guests who came out into the hallway. The third day we were at Little Round Top, and I decided to crawl between some rocks to get a perspective of what the sharpshooters would have seen. While laying on my stomach, I felt someone lay a hand on my shoulder and whisper in my ear, "I see him." At first I thought it was my brother until I heard him call my name from the statue that sits off to the side. It was so odd after that, I kept feeling as if I was about to turn around and bump into someone. It got to the point I turned around and I felt extremely cold, as if I had walked into a freezer. My mother, who was beside me, also noticed the temperature difference and commented how odd it was. Later that evening, about an hour before the sun went down, me and my mom took the car to see a couple more things and take some pictures. We were at the high water mark taking pictures and thinking about what could have been going through those poor men's thoughts. It brought tears to our eyes, and we both heard a man say, "Don't cry for me, lass." The atmosphere shifted and it felt extremely peaceful and relaxing. It was as if whoever it was trying to comfort us. We both sat there for a while until it was time to go. As we walked back to where we parked the car, there was a couple sitting beside their car. They said hello and we had a small conversation, and in mid-conversation we all stopped talking. From the battlefield we all heard fifes and drums. The couple seemed unnerved and they got up, said goodbye and got into their car. We decided that it was time to leave since it was almost dark and no one should be on the battlefield at night. Our last day there, we toured Eisenhower's home and then toured Big Round Top. Eventually my brother and father wanted to go back to the hotel, so we took them back. We decided to go back to Big Round Top, seeing as it was our last day to explore. We parked the car and walked into the forest. We had about 2 hours before the sun set and no one was around. About 20 minutes into the hike, my mom stopped and I was about to ask what was wrong when I heard footsteps. There were multiple footsteps that we could hear, and they stopped. Then when we would start walking again, the footsteps would start up again. At one point we decided to turn back and my mother needed a rest, so we sat on a boulder. It suddenly got quiet to the point there were no crickets, birds, or any other forest sounds. Then all at once we heard horses snorting and trotting or galloping past us. Then it full on sounded like we were in the middle of a battle. Bugles sounding, clashing of swords, muskets firing, and lots of men yelling. We were in complete shock and it lasted for a couple minutes, then it all stopped. We started talking about what we had just witnessed, and then we heard several men calling out, "Help! Help me! I don't want to die!" and crying. It was so overwhelming that we booked it back to where we parked the car, and when we got to the car a park ranger was there. He took one look at us and asked, "What did you all see or hear?" We explained what had happened and he told us that he had stopped a man he thought was a Union soldier reenactor. He had told him he wasn't allowed on the battlefield after dark. He said the man smiled and with a shrug carried on. He said he was about to stop him again when the soldier walked through a tree and disappeared. We went back to the hotel, and the next morning as we were eating our breakfast in the dining area before checkout, me, my mother and brother heard a bugle playing, but no one else in the dining area seemed to hear it. It was all a bunch of strange events, but we did go back and we had even more experiences the second time. We have several pictures where you can clearly see soldiers on horseback and soldiers around the different spots on the battlefields. I may upload pictures if I can. If you get a chance, it is a great place for history and the paranormal. These instances happened at my grandparents' house just outside of Albuquerque, New Mexico in Tijeras. I've had several creepy experiences from the time I was a kid until just this summer. My grandpa had a quad that we used to take out for rides in Cibola National Forest. A lot of the property was owned and the owners usually dragged logs and branches over the trail to deter people from driving too far. My brother and I were probably 9 and 12 at the time. We were pretty stubborn, so we pulled the logs away and planned on dragging them back on our return. We had gone pretty far when we noticed the sun was setting fast. I got a very uneasy feeling all of a sudden. It felt like we were being watched and preyed upon. I looked at my younger brother and could tell he felt it too. I hurried him and told him we have to leave. Now. We jumped on the quad and started down that trail as fast as we could. My adrenaline was rushing through my body and made me panic even more when we saw that someone had dragged all the branches back over the trail. There were at least 4 or 5 places where there were branches. We made it back to my grandparents' street just as my grandmother and mom were starting up the trail. They were pretty pissed. My brother and I are still rattled from it. My uncle used to tell us his scary paranormal stories from when he worked on bombers in the Air Force. But he also had a similar experience to ours. He said he went out there with my cousins on the same quad once. He was out there all alone with them and had a sudden urgency that he had to get back home. That something wasn't right. He doesn't scare easily, and the look on his face as he recounted this memory made me feel like I was back in those woods. Nothing happened, but he doesn't like that forest either. We both confirmed that there's something creepy out there. Another time I was staying with my family at my grandparents' house when I was 18. I stayed in my aunt's old room by myself and slept on the left side of the bed, where I always sleep. That night I had an awful dream where I was talking to a friend from high school. His face slowly morphed into another friend's face. It was extremely unsettling. And then it morphed into a demonic-looking face. I can't recall the details of the face itself, but it horrified me. I'm somewhat of a lucid dreamer and often force myself to wake up if I see things going south. I started to wake up, but before I did, the face started saying you can't. And when I woke, I heard save them. It was whispered into my right ear. My body was laying diagonally across the bed with my head on the right corner. It was almost like I had been dragged to that side of the bed. I jumped up on the bed and stared at the black corner and felt like there was a presence. It was pitch black and there was no way I was getting up to turn on the lights. I remembered the movie The Haunting of Emily Rose and how 3 a.m. was a bad time for demonic activity. I glanced at the clock and prayed it wasn't 3 a.m. It wasn't quite that time. But I remember it being close enough. I sat in bed and prayed for hours until I finally passed out. I called both of my friends the next day to make sure they were okay. They laughed it off and said I was paranoid. I don't care though. Rather safe than sorry. This past summer I spent a lot of time at my grandparents' house visiting. I had planned a backpacking trip with my friend in Taos and wanted to try out my new tree tent in the creepy forest before we packed it in. I am now 27 and feel like I shouldn't be afraid of silly things like a feeling I had 15 years ago. So I went to the ranger station near the house and asked the volunteers where the best spot would be for my tent. The lady looked at me in a very concerned way and asked if I had planned on camping by myself. I mentioned my friend was coming and that he always has a firearm with him. She said she didn't think that was a good idea. That just recently someone had camped and for some reason left in the middle of the night. Left all of his gear, tent, sleeping bag, food, everything. And that a lot of drug addicts and sketchy homeless people live in the woods and threaten campers. This made me feel uneasy, so I decided to just post up behind my family's house just a little way from view. I had everything ready and my friend came into town. We stayed in the house talking to my grandma until around 1 or 2 a.m. She's a crazy night owl, but I love it. We get to camp and Nestle and drinking beer. We talk until 4 a.m. when we decide it's time to sleep. But I start getting that super scary feeling. And now I have to pee because I drank too much beer. I tell my friend how creeped out I am and jokingly tell him if I stop talking to come out and look for him. So I'm casually talking to him all while peeing behind a tree, haha. Anyways, nothing happens except for me laughing it off. I get back in my bag and my friend quickly falls asleep. I, however, laid in bed all night scared stiff at every snap tree branch I hear. We're in my hammock tree tent and all I can think of is someone walking underneath us and stabbing us. I didn't sleep at all that night. But nothing happened. If anyone has ever lived in or been to the Cibola National Forest, have you had any weird happenings? I wonder if it's haunted or something. I know there are tons of Native American landmarks around Albuquerque. I am sharing an experience my husband had about 3 years or so ago. We live in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, and it was about 8 or 9 at night. We were planning to go out into our backyard and just chill out to enjoy the cool air and have a small fire. I was inside when this happened, so I did not see anything. I was talking to my oldest daughter and my husband went outside and sat down in a chair. He leaned back and looked up at the sky, and he said what he saw scared him so bad he just froze. He said he heard absolutely no noise whatsoever and it was about 8 feet in length, with leathery skin, and huge wings. It was about 20 feet above the rooftops of the houses. He watched it until it went out of sight, so in 2 minutes or less. It was flying in a northwest direction. His way of describing it was it looked like the creature from Jeepers Creepers. He came running into the house, shut the back door, shut the blinds, and was shaking and white as a sheet. It took me 3 days to get him to finally tell me what he saw, and he doesn't like speaking of it. To this day he still avoids it when brought up. He would not go outside for weeks at night after that, not even to get something from his truck. I am sharing this story because there has to be something out there. We have been married for 15 years and never has one of us ever joked around about anything like that. Something weird happened to me years ago when I was picking up my niece from the bus stop at the end of our road. My house lies in the very middle of our street. I used to pick up my niece every day as her mother was at work. It was an ordinary day. Not much sun but cloudy as I recall. The stop is about a 2 or 3 minute walk, depending on how fast your pace is, from my house. You can see the end of my driveway when you're halfway there. Only about 3 to 4 houses away. My niece was in the first grade at the time. She was maybe 6 or 7 years old. I must mention that my father was close to the end of his life. When my niece and I were about halfway home, I looked up and gazed near the end of my driveway. There was this humanoid figure just standing there facing us. It was looking in our direction. Was it looking at us? Waiting for us? I can't make out many details as to its attire, only to say it was all black. Like all black clothes, or silhouetted? I could not make out the face either, but I knew it had one. I'm not sure about the color. Why couldn't I make out any details as we were a short distance from my house? I got this eerie feeling about it though, and it just wasn't good news. While I was walking, I asked my niece if she could see it too. She confirmed she could. I asked her, who is that? Neither of us could tell who or what that was. I kept watching it as we came closer. Still couldn't see the facial features well. It was tall. I'd say about 6 or 7 feet. It was still like a statue. No movement or sound. Just there. I looked down at my niece for a very brief second or two, and when I looked up again it was gone instantly. Just like that. It was there for only a minute or two. 1 minute it's there, and the next minute, poof, it's gone. As if nothing was ever there. As we reached my house, there was no one anywhere. Where could someone run that fast? I was the only one home at that time, and they would have told me if they were waiting for us or something. I never saw him again, and to this day every once in a while it comes to mind. The strange thing about it is that my niece can't remember a thing. I tried to refresh her memory a few times, as she did say at the time she saw it too, but it's like that one memory has been erased. Was it because she was so young at the time? How much can kids remember at that age? One more thing, my father passed away the very next day. I think it was the summer of 1982. My friend Mike and I used to spend hours on the hills behind my grandmother's house on 48th Street in Benwood, West Virginia. Route 2, a four-lane highway, and the railroad tracks were right there. Even though Mike and I were just kids, both around 11, we disobeyed our parents and carefully crossed the four-lane highway. On the other side was what I now believe to be a game trail. No doubt created by deer on their quest for the river. This was the path to our adventure and led to all the cool spots we would come to enjoy. We climbed the hill and passed our favorite locations, like that little overhang of rock that could shelter us from the rain and provide a convenient place to light a fire. We loved building small fires. We were careful though. I give us credit for that. Good old Smokey Bear did his job. A little later in our explorations, we found an even larger overhang that would provide shelter from even a storm. This, we thought to ourselves, was where the Indians took shelter. Despite the truth of that statement, we never found any indicators of modern occupation. Do not forget, we were 11 and 12. Now, the forest was beautiful that time of year. Birds were chirping and sunlight streamed through the openings in the forest canopy. I can remember the smell of some wild bush on the land, some aromatic thing floating through the air. I felt good that day and I was with a good friend. At some point, we deviated from the trail and began to move north along the side of the hill. Keep in mind we could hear the highway below. So we were able to get through. We went perhaps a few hundred yards and then began to descend. We made our own path through the woods, but soon we would find our path blocked. We see something hunched over moving up and down rhythmically. There was no sound except for the creature rustling the underbrush. It looked about the size of an ape or perhaps a small bear, but it was now upright on two legs. We did not know what to think. My first reaction was to throw my Jolly Rancher at the creature and take off running down the hill in the direction of the highway. I think Mike did the same, but at that instant, it was all about me. Suddenly we come to a screaming, screeching halt, briars. There was a whole wall of them and no clear path around them. In fact, we were among them before we even knew what happened. We looked around and listened, but there was no sign of the creature. It must have taken us a half hour to find our way through or around the briars and find our way back to the highway. When I look back at it, it was an adventure, but one that scared the freaking crap out of me. We returned home and made no mention of it to our parents. After all, They did not need to know just how far we had gone that day. Firstly, I'd like to mention that I'm Australian, and we have our own version of Craigslist down here, albeit with fewer bizarre occurrences. For simplicity, I'll refer to it as Craigslist even though it's owned by a different company and has a different name in Australia. If you live in Australia, you might be familiar with the site I'm talking about. Now, let me share my story from 2014. I had been saving up some cash to upgrade my desktop, as my current setup, a Samsung notebook with a subpar Intel Atom processor and 2GB of RAM, was inadequate for gaming. I was searching on Craigslist late at night for a desktop in my region with specific requirements, Windows 7, 4GB of RAM, and a decent CPU or GPU. After scrolling through various listings, I stumbled upon one that seemed like a great deal, 8GB of RAM, Windows 7 Home 64-bit, Core i5 processor, and a 710 GT GPU, all for $120. Excited about the potential steal, I logged into my Craigslist account and got the seller's number from the listing page. Using my old Nokia phone, I dialed the number and, after a short wait, the seller, with a voice that sounded old, answered. The conversation took an eerie turn when he shared details about a woman he met on Craigslist, and he invited me to pick up the desktop at his remote location, offering a peculiar arrangement for payment. Despite feeling uneasy, I decided to proceed with picking up the desktop that night. The seller provided an address in the middle of nowhere, and when I arrived, his house looked like a typical rural Australian residence. However, upon reaching the porch, there was no sign of the promised desktop. After knocking on the door and receiving no response, I called the seller, only to discover that his number had been disconnected. Suddenly, I heard loud bangs from the back of the house, triggering my instincts to flee. Racing back to my car, I escaped the location and, later that night, received a chilling message from a private number. The message suggested a sinister encounter in the future, leaving me shaken. The next day, I attempted to revisit the location in daylight to unravel the mystery. To my surprise, the house looked demolished, raising questions about what transpired overnight. Unable to find the seller's profile on Craigslist, I realized the entire ordeal might have been a perilous encounter. This experience serves as a cautionary tale, emphasizing the risks of venturing into remote areas for transactions, especially late at night. If you must do so, consider bringing friends and taking necessary precautions for your safety. I used to work as a barista when I was 17 at a drive-up coffee stand, often working alone during closing shifts. The setting became somewhat eerie as darkness fell. Being a barista, engaging in friendly conversations with customers was part of the job, and I usually kept up the banter. One night, an older gentleman in his 50s or 60s pulled up in a gray BMW. I took his order, complimented his car, and he began talking about his classic cars. He showed me a picture on his phone, featuring a woman in her 20s, mentioning she was an old friend he met on Craigslist. This revelation made me uneasy, but I continued with the transaction. As the conversation progressed, he veered into personal details, sharing stories about his life. Feeling uncomfortable, I tried to shorten the interaction, but he shifted to talking about his dogs and showed me pictures. He disclosed he wasn't married, had no kids, and even delved into his profession as a director. The situation grew weirder when he asked my age, and upon learning I was 17, he made inappropriate comments about my appearance and suggested I should be in his movies. He handed me a paper with the words director and Steve Smith, a fake name, along with his email, claiming he hadn't received his official cards yet. Feeling alarmed, I wrapped up the encounter, and he left. Concerned about this unsettling encounter, I consulted a friend in law enforcement who couldn't look up the individual without a specific reason. Eventually, I filed an informational report with the police chief, providing details about the incident. Attempts to find the guy in the system failed, leading the officer to suspect he may have been trying to lure me, using a fake name. Patrol cars were dispatched to check on me periodically for safety. A few days later, a coworker reported a similar encounter with the same individual. Though I didn't see him again, the unsettling feeling lingered, knowing he had inaccurate information about me. Unfortunately, I had more creepy encounters at the coffee stand, and depending on the response to this post, I might share additional incidents involving law enforcement contact. I took care of a dog for an old couple after seeing their ad on Craigslist. I was still studying during the week and had no time to work except at night or late evenings, which I didn't like. I had trouble sleeping, so I didn't want to work late and mess up the sleep I got from 2 to 6 in the morning. As a result, I ended up working on weekends. Craigslist was a good website for me, as it always was. It provided simple and quick money, which was exactly what I needed. While I used to joke that it sounded like I was addicted to it, the reality was that I wasn't. At that time, I was 23 years old, living with my parents, and felt like I could do anything in the world, or at least that's what I believed. I was open to trying anything for money, as I didn't like the idea of having a big career. Taking care of dogs seemed like the perfect job for me. It didn't pay too much, but it was all right for what it was. Additionally, I really liked dogs, but we didn't have one in our family because my dad didn't like them. My dad was often grumpy, coming home late from work and trying to spend as little time at home as possible. When he was home, he would argue with my mom and constantly bother my two brothers, even when there was no reason. Dog sitting not only helped me earn some extra money but also gave me a chance to leave the house and spend time with cute dogs. On this particular occasion, I responded to an ad from an old couple. I arrived at their house, and they welcomed me warmly. They were heading to Chicago to see their family and wanted me to stay over the weekend. They generously offered me access to the fully stocked fridge, which contained an abundance of food, including homemade items made specifically for me. Their hospitality exceeded my expectations. The couple provided me with instructions, introduced me to their cute chihuahua named Aslan, and showed me around the house. They planned to return on Monday, and my job was to be there for 2 or maybe 3 nights if they needed me. They gave me their cell phone number for emergencies. The first night went well, and Aslan slept at the end of my bed on her own little bed. The next morning, I took her for a walk before preparing her breakfast. The walk went smoothly, and Aslan behaved nicely. However, things took a dramatic turn when she choked on a bone, and I had to perform life-saving measures to clear her airway. After successfully saving Aslan's life, I contacted the owners to inform them of the incident. The husband advised me to contact the family friend who was a vet and would come to the house. The vet provided necessary treatments, and Aslan recovered over the next 2 days. This experience taught me a valuable lesson about the unpredictability of dog sitting, even when using Craigslist. I was going to buy a Jaguar, the car, not the animal, from Craigslist. I had to send my dad to check it out due to work and schedule conflicts. My dad checks it out and simply tells me that it was not the same car as pictured. I guess there was a lot more body damage than pictured. He said he pointed it out to the guy and declined to purchase at the price asked. The guy flips his shit and tells my dad to get lost, so he leaves. This guy calls me while I'm at work and yells at me about how rude my dad was and wanted me to apologize. I tell him to F off. He keeps calling me for days, leaving all kinds of nasty messages right before I change my number. The last message is him ranting, then asking me if I still wanted the car at the price my dad offered. Could not believe this guy. I had discussed renting a room from a woman on Craigslist, and showed up on the first day of the contract to move in and pay rent for the first month. She's showing me around, and right before we entered the room she asks, did I mention the fire? The room was entirely black, with sections of the ceiling ripped out, sections of the floor melted off, entirely blackened walls with a charcoal trim and blinds melted in a pool at the bottom of the window frame. One of the windows was boarded up and it smelled like 1,000 cigarettes, as a nice tuff on the horrible appearance. Everything was covered in soot. She tried to guilt me into paying for the room anyway because she had already paid to have keys cut, despite forgetting to mention this small detail. I left with a huge grin, trying not to laugh. It had slipped her mind that the room she was renting to me burnt down in between that moment and when she sent me pictures.